So I still see him, but...
Good morning, I was just here yesterday, I haven't seen you for a long time.
Yeah, so I was here last Monday, and then we had the Shvil Yisrael, as you may know from Steve.
I didn't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So Wednesday or Thursday last week.
Oh, I see, right. So hot water?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much.
Did you have a bag yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, light tea, and then we put the bag into a cup.
Into a cup, yeah.
All right. So we just have a few more lines to finish in the first perek for us. And then if it's Hashem, we will begin the second perek. That's our goal for today. So if you're taking a look on page, you'd give them in base.
Wait, so we're going to jump from Yud Gimel to Chaf Aleph.
Right. Okay. Actually, from Yudal, we're just going to read Yud Gimel with Beis. So if you're counting up from the bottom of the Amud, you're counting up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines. Now, if you weren't here yesterday, then don't expect to understand this. It doesn't matter. We're going to start the new parak. Let me just, you know, pay my debts, okay? Uh-huh. Tana, we learned in the Braisa, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer Omru, and now we're going to substitute an entirely different pshat, where the Mishnah said that you took Lachmei Todah that were psulos, and you placed them on an itzabah, and that was the simon that would send the message exactly whether it was the fifth hour on Erev Pesach or the sixth hour on Erev Pesach. According to Rabbi Eliezer, we're not talking about Lachmei Todah psulos, but rather Lachmei Todah ksheros. And you were allowed to eat them. These were regular, classic lachmei todah that you would have a mitzvah to eat them. Kolzman shemunachos. So if you had both lachmei todah that were placed on top of the itzabah, is kol ha'am ochlim. Everybody could eat chametz because that meant it was the fifth hour. Nitla achas mihem. Once you took one of them, then tolin. Lo ayu ochlin velo sarfin. Now what that means is that once they removed one of the two lachmei todah, then it meant that we were entering into the fifth hour, and the fifth hour is called tolin. And this reflects the Shita Rabbi Yehuda. That means we don't eat chametz. Yeah, I need that, so just put it on the side here.
Okay.
So we don't eat chametz, but on the other hand, we're allowed to benefit from the chametz, which means that we're allowed to feed it to a dog, we can sell it to a guy. That's called lo ochlin v'lo sarfin. Nitla shtehen. At what moment in time did they remove both of the lachmei todah? That was at the end of the fifth hour, right before they entered into the sixth hour. Hischilu kulan sarfin, so that the people would now know with the beginning of the sixth hour it's time to burn the chametz. And here Rabbi Lazar is of the opinion that they could eat the lachmei todah right before the beginning of the sixth hour. And the reason for that is because lachmei todah have the same status as truma. And you may recall that we made a special dispensation for Truma because we don't want to destroy Truma, and we're going to give Truma one extra hour. So Truma, let's say if Truma was made of chametz, you'd be allowed to eat the Truma up until the beginning of the sixth hour. Whereas regular classic chametz, if it wasn't Truma, it would be chulin, you'd have to stop eating it at the beginning of the fifth hour. Now lachmei todah have the same status as Truma, which means that there's a compelling force that wants us to eat it because of the mitzvah of Hegdesh, of Kodesh. Just like Truma is Kodesh, so too lachmei todah are Kodesh. And therefore we're going to give you the entire fifth hour permission to eat the lachmei todah. And what they would do is they would remove the second of the two lachamim at the end of the fifth hour, going into the sixth hour, but before the clock struck the sixth hour. And therefore they were still allowed to eat the lachmei todah. And what do we gain by this? we gain that according to Rabbi Loza, the Braisa and the Mishnah are talking about Lachmi Todek Sheros. So we don't have to go through all the somersaults in the air that we went through yesterday in the long sugya to figure out why these Lachmi Todek became psulos. Tanya, we have a Braisa. Abishol, over here, we're turning to Yudalad Omer Aleph. Shtei Paros HaYucharshim Bahara Mishka. According to the view of Abba Shaul, there was a different simon that they used. It wasn't a lachmei toda, but rather it was shtei paros. Now let's try to figure out what these shtei paros are. The harazesim, which is on the contiguous to or near the harabayis, is called a Haram Mishcha, otherwise known as Haram Zesim. And they had two paros that would plow the field, plow on top of this mountain on Erev Pesach. It wasn't really Harisha, it was something that looked like Harisha. And the reason why I mentioned that it wasn't Harisha, again, we're going to get to this in the fourth parak of Mirtz Hashem, is that on Erev Pesach we don't do malacha, we don't work with a cow, and we don't plow a field. So it means that it was something that looked a little bit like Harisha. And what would happen? Kol zman shesteim charshos, as long as the people saw both of the cows, then kol ha'am ochlin, they knew it was before the beginning of the fifth hour, and they could still eat chametz. Nitla achas mehen, once they took away one of the two paros, they knew it was time to stop eating chametz. It was the beginning of the fifth hour. And that's called tolin, meaning the chametz cannot be eaten, lo ochlin, but v'lo sarf, we don't have to burn it until the beginning of the sixth hour. Nitl shteim, when they took both cows away, hischilu kol ha'am sarf, and they knew that the clock had struck the beginning of the sixth hour's time to burn all the chametz. Now there's a footnote here that I wanted to share with you. We had a discussion yesterday. Oh, this is only, again, those who weren't here yesterday, I'm sorry, there's no way I can go through all of yesterday's shiur, but it doesn't matter, we're starting a new perek in about 3 minutes' time, so just give me those extra 3 minutes. And we discussed the fact that there were no karbonas toda brought on the 14th of Nisan, because you're not allowed to be mamait zman achila of kodshim. So in the case of lachmei toda, since they're chametz, the latest time you can eat the lachmei toda would be the beginning of the sixth hour. Instead of giving you the whole day to eat the kodshim, we'd have to cut it down. Therefore, there were no karbonos toda brought on the 14th of Nisan. Those of you who might remember, we don't have the minig of reciting mizmor l'soda on Erev Pesach. That's because of this halach that we discussed yesterday. However, Rabbi Lozar here, that we saw in the bottom of Daf Yud Gimel and Beis, he's of the opinion that in fact they were makriv a karban toda on Yud Dalet, because otherwise, again, if they were makriv it on Yud Gimel, then it was already possible lina. In other words, how could you have lachmei toda on the 14th to set it up on top of the itztaba as a siman and call it ksheros? It couldn't be ksheros because it would have to be possible lina. Ipso facto, we must assume that according to Rabbi Eliezer, according to Rabbi Lozar, excuse me, it means that there were lachmei toda brought on the 14th. Then he adds another possibility. He says that Rabbi Lozar holds like Rabbi Gamliel, and Trumas Chametz is eaten the entire fifth hour, v'huadim l'kodshim. And therefore, they would be able to eat the lachmei toda ksheros up until the end of the fifth hour, whereas regular chametz you couldn't eat during the fifth hour, because we paskin, and even Rav Gamliel paskins like that shita, that the fifth hour is aser b'chametz. Now, how did the Kohanim know to eat the lachmei toda right before the beginning of the sixth hour? I mean, there's a very short period of time there. And the answer is, we have a principle called Kohanim, Don, you'll be happy to hear this, Kohanim Zrizanim. That Kohanim are always considered Zrizan. They're very careful about the time to make sure that everything's done in the right way and at the right time. Now, it's possible also that this Gemara of Rabbi Lazar about Lachmei Toda Ksheros is addressing the following scenario. what happens if there was no Shechitas HaZevach? Do you remember that we said that the Kiddush of the Lachmei Todah was only after the Shechitas HaZevach? And then it became Kadosh B'Kedush HaGuf, and there was no possibility of Binyan. What could be possible here is that Rabbi Lozer is addressing the scenario where the Zevach itself got lost before the Shechita. And if it got before, as we discussed yesterday, if it got lost before the Shechita, then it's Mutar B'Achila through Pidyon, because it only has Kedushas Damim and not Kedushas HaGuf. Okay, Rabbi Lozer, now we begin the third perek. The reason why we're skipping the balance of the first parak, everyone's invited to learn it on your own if you'd like, the sugya of what's called Rab Chanina Eskankona, because that's a sugya of Taharos, which is very, very complicated. It would take us years to learn that sugya, literally years. So we're going to learn the parak called Kol Shah, and this parak, which starts on Daf Chaf Aleph Amid Aleph, addresses the following topics. Number one, we're going to talk about the Isur Chametz, the halachas of Chametz. Number two, we're going to talk about in this perek the mitzvah achilas matzah. We're going to talk about the mitzvah achilas morar. We're going to talk about what is the time for the Isur Chametz, both for achila and hanah. How to fulfill the mitzvah bir chametz, the law of chametz b'tarovus, if chametz gets mixed up with other food, the law of hagolas kelim, and it's to prepare your utensils for use on Pesach. And finally, we're going to discuss the laws of chametz she'avra lava Pesach, which means that chametz that you did not sell, or you weren't mevatel l'chametz, and it was in your possession over Pesach. And we're going to discuss some other minute, or I shouldn't say minute, but rare cases like chametz that got buried under debris. We're going to talk about eating trumas chametz on Pesach. We're going to talk about different kinds of species of grains that are used for chametz and for matzah. We're going to talk about what vegetables you can use for maror. And we're going to talk a little bit about Durabanans in Chametz, which means Chametz Nukshe. So that's just a quick list of, thank you, of those topics that we hope to cover in this very chock full of Hilchas Pesach Perek. You know, if you wanted to learn the laws of Pesach, this would probably be the most important Perek that you'd have to learn. And we're going to start with the first Mishnah, obviously, and this Mishnah addresses two points. The first point is chametz. What's the status of chametz at the time of the isur? Are you allowed to benefit from it? For example, you're not allowed to eat it, but maybe you're allowed to feed it to your animal. As we said, the fifth hour might be that twilight zone where you're, on the one hand, you're not allowed to eat it yourself, human consumption is forbidden, but you're allowed to feed it to your animals. And number two, the Mishnah is going to codify a machlokas here between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim about how exactly you fulfill the mitzvah of bir chametz. How do you destroy chametz? So let's read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, kol shah shemuto lechol machil. In other words, the Mishnah establishes that I would call it like mimanafshach. It is either you're allowed to eat it, and then you're allowed to benefit from it, you're allowed to feed it to your animals, or you're not allowed to eat it, and you're not allowed to feed it to your animals. The Mishnah at this point seems to deny the excluded middle, meaning that you could have a time period which, on the one hand, you're allowed to feed your animals, even though you're not allowed to eat it, but rather, kol shosh and mutal lechel, if you're allowed to eat it, machil, you're allowed to feed it to your animals, and you're allowed to sell it to a guy, you're allowed to have benefit from it. And once it becomes also bachila, and you're not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to feed it to your animals as well. So again, the Mishnah seems to be excluding that hour, which we've discussed a great length, the fifth hour on Yudalid, which is also bachila, but you're allowed to benefit from it. Now, when the Mishnah tells you about feeding your animals, it's very interesting. It's like the Mishnah takes us to a zoo and classifies all the animals under three different categories. Why the Mishnah had to do this? We're going to have to try to rack our brains and figure it out. There's behema, there's chaya, and there's ophos. So it's very easy to differentiate between behema and chaya on the one hand and ophos. Ophos are birds, whereas behema is animals. The difference between behema and chaya is that behemah basically is a general term that includes all animals, with the exception of a very few that are called chaya. In fact, there are only 10 species of kosher chayos. Chayos are a little bit more the untamable animals, the wilder animals. I think in English maybe they call them a beast as opposed to an animal. I don't know. Now, why did the Mishnah have to tell me that if I'm feeding my chametz, I'm allowed to feed it to a behemah, I'm allowed to feed it to a chaya, I'm allowed to feed it to an oaf? That's what the Gemara is going to try to analyze. What's the chiddush here of behemah, chaya, and oaf?
And what's excluded as a result?
I don't think anything is excluded, but if we only had one, we would exclude the other. And if we only had these two, we would exclude the third one. That's what the Gemara is going to go through a whole... That's our subject for today. You know, why if we only had behemah, maybe you're allowed to feed your behemah, but you're not allowed to feed a chaya, you're allowed to feed a chaya, not an oaf. If you had an oaf, you wouldn't be allowed to eat it. Why did the Mishnah have to tell you you're allowed to eat? And basically covering the whole gamut. Umochra l'nachri, and you're allowed to sell your chametz to a non-Jew. And then mutal ba'anaso, in a general sense, the Mishnah says you're allowed to benefit from the chametz. Why? Because if it's a time period that you're allowed to eat the chametz, you're allowed to benefit from the chametz. However, avar zmano, once the time period for achila has passed, and you're no longer allowed to eat the chametz, is asur b'ana asur. You're not allowed to have any benefit from the chametz. Not only that, v'lo yasik bo tanur v'kirayim, you're not even allowed to use chametz as fuel to burn your oven. Now you might ask me, well, obviously I can't do that if I'm not allowed to have any benefit from it. But the answer is, really what you're benefiting from it is the fire. You're not really benefiting the chametz. The chametz is, through combustion, is being turned into charcoal, and already it loses its status of chametz. The Mishnah is telling me a big chiddush, that even though the chametz is going up in smoke and it's creating this fire and I'm cooking my pot on top of the fire, but nevertheless I'm still benefiting from the chametz, and we're going to have to understand why. At the end of the Mishnah addresses the question of how to destroy your chametz and records a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein bir chametz el sreifa. When the Torah says tashbisu, destroy your chametz, it requires exclusively sreifa. You have to burn your chametz. Chachamim omrim, Chachamim disagree. Af mefar v'zora l'ruach o matil yam. You can have many different alternative methods of getting rid of your chametz. You don't have to burn it.
You
can crush it and make it into smaller, what word?
Crumbs.
Crumb, make it into, your crumbs I knew, but what's the verb for making crumbs?
Crumble,
okay. You can crumble your chametz and make it into crumbles. And then what you do with the crumbles is that you throw it up in the air, and the air, the wind will just blow it away. Or alternatively, you can crumble your chametz, and when you have the crumbs of the chametz, you're allowed to throw it into the water. Now some say, and again we're going to get into this later on, that you read the Mishnah the following way: mefar v'zora l'ruach. That's one method where you crumble it and then you throw it into the wind. Oh, now it's a whole new method, matil yam. You don't even have to crumble it. The question is, when you throw chametz, let's say you have a big piece of bread, you know, a full loaf of bread, and you can throw it into the ocean or into the river, are you required to crumble it first? That'll be an issue. But what I wanted to discuss with you is, the Masifta has a few footnotes here at the very beginning of this perek. I really should probably photocopy this for you, but in the meantime, let's just do a Torah Sheval Peh. I'll read it and try to translate it the best I can. Okay. First of all, he points out that the Mishnah is telling me that you're allowed to feed your animals only when you're allowed to eat it yourself. But once you're not allowed to eat it, then you're not allowed to feed your animals. And this seems to contradict the earlier Mishnah that we had at the end of our discussion in the first parak, that it could be that over zmano, when you're not, no longer allowed to eat it, you're still allowed to benefit from it, and it's mutar b'hana. So therefore, we're going to have to see if we can find any way of putting this Mishnah at the beginning of the second parak in the context of what we learned in the first parak. Because again, in the first parak we had the fifth hour, which was asur b'achila but mutar b'ana. And yet the Mishnah here is telling me that I can't feed my animal once I'm asur b'achila. If I can't eat it, I can't feed my animal. That would seem to be a glaring contradiction to what we saw in the previous Mishnah, meaning, when I say previous Mishnah, I mean the last Mishnah that we studied together. Now he quotes here the Maram Chalava, one of the Sephardic Rishonim, because L'chora, you know, when the Mishnah says that Chametz, when it's Mutar B'Achila, is Mutar B'Ana, that seems to be totally superfluous. Obviously, if I'm allowed to eat it, then I'm allowed to feed it to my animal. He says the following, that the chiddush of this Mishnah is that you're allowed to feed it to both a behema, a chaya, and an oaf. And the Gemara is going to try to explain why we would think behema yes, chaya yes, behema no, etc., etc. But the fundamental idea that if I'm allowed to eat it, I'm allowed to feed it to my dog, that's pashut, that's not a chiddush. The Mishnah is only being mechadish that all these categories of animals are the same. And you're allowed to feed all these animals, as we said before. The Gemara is going to go through a description of all three categories and tell you why you would think that this category is better than that. You know, a chaya, let's say, will hide in the chametz so you won't be able to find it. A behem will eat up all the chametz, and so forth. So all the different svaras that the Gemara is going to have. Now, when it says that once chametz is asur b'achila, you're not allowed to feed it to an animal, what's the deal if the animal is not your animal? For example, Yushalmi addresses the following case. What about an animal that's hefker? You know, there's an animal out there, and I decide I want to feed the animal. And it's already past the time that I'm not allowed to eat the chametz, and therefore I'm not allowed to feed the animal. What about this animal? I benefit if I feed my own animal. I don't have to serve it, Gainsburgers for dinner, right? But what about if I'm feeding, an animal of hefker? I mean, l'chora, that's not called hana. And the Yerushalmi is mechadesh that nesina lebehemas hefker hana hi etzlo. The fact that he wants to feed this animal gives him pleasure, and be kind to animals, kind of thing. And if his heart feels an empathy, a sympathy for animals, and that's why he wants to feed the animals, and chametz is asur b'ana, then he's benefiting from the chametz, again, indirectly, because he enjoys feeding the animals. Okay. So let's read the Gemara now. Kol shoshem mutol lecho machil. Says the Gemara, ha kol shasha eino mutal lechol, eino machil. The implication of the Mishnah is that if I'm not allowed to eat the chametz, I'm not allowed to feed it to my animal. Lema masnisin, delo. Okay. Is lema masnisin delo k'Rav Yehuda? Again, Rav Yehuda says that in the fifth hour, you're not allowed to eat the chametz, but you're allowed to feed your animal. You're allowed to have hanor from the chametz. The e Rabbi Yehuda, if our Mishnah would be Rabbi Yehuda, ha'ika chamesh, we have the fifth hour, di'eno ochel, although he's not allowed to eat it, but nevertheless, machil, he can feed it to his animal. Tisnan, Rabbi Meir, omer ochlin kol chamesh, this is our Mishnah, the last Mishnah we discussed. Meaning that chametz is mutter even for achilas adam in the fifth hour, according to Rabbi Meir. V'sarfin, but when we finish the fifth hour, we begin with the sixth hour. We have to get rid of the chametz. We're not allowed to eat it. We're not allowed to feed it to our animal. And we burn it at the beginning of the sixth hour. Rabbi Yehuda omer ochlin kol arba. But when we get to the fifth hour, we're not allowed to eat it. But even though we're not allowed to eat it, it's not asur b'ana. We can still benefit from it. And during the fifth hour, tolim means we don't eat it, but we feed it to our animal, or any other form of hano we're allowed to benefit from. V'sarfim b'tchila sheish. And we have to get rid of it, meaning it becomes absolute chametz, absolute asur b'ana, only at the beginning of the sixth hour. So how could this Mishnah be reconciled with Rabbi Yehuda? The Mishnah says that kol shah, shemutol lechol machil, that anytime you're allowed to eat it, you're allowed to feed it to your dog. Meaning that if you're not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to feed it to the dog. But that's not really true, because according to Abiyud in the fifth hour, you're not allowed to eat it, but you're allowed to feed it to your dog.
And that would only be though if it was my animal.
Again, I'm not getting into that question, whether it's my animal, an animal of hefker, right?
If it's an animal of hefker, what benefit do I have?
Oh, so again, I'll go over the Yerushalmi if you want. The Yerushalmi says that a person who feels compassion towards an animal derives pleasure from feeding an animal. Okay, that's what we discussed. You can argue against the Yerushalmi, but that's the Yerushalmi. But again, we're getting off on
sure.
The main topic here is Rabosai, is there a time period which fits the following description? It's aser b'achila, but it's mutar b'ana. I can't eat the chametz, but I'm allowed to feed it to my dog. And the answer is that depends on a machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says the fifth hour fits exactly that description. I'm not allowed to eat it. That's called tolin. Tolin means I'm not allowed to eat it. But I can feed it to my animal. I can benefit from the chametz up until the beginning of the sixth hour. So that fifth hour is aser b'achilas adam, but mutar b'achilas behema. It's mutar b'anah. Our Mishnah, on the other hand, would seem to reflect the sheet of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir has an either-or situation. Either it's asur or it's mutar. But once it's asur both for you and b'anah for feeding your animal. Because Rabbi Meir says that up until the beginning of the sixth hour, you're allowed to eat it. Meaning you and I can eat it in the fifth hour. With the inception of the sixth hour, I have to burn it because I'm not allowed to feed it to my dog. So that's what the Gemara is claiming now. At this point, the Gemara thinks that our Mishnah reflects the sheet of Rabbi Meir, which is a little bit uncomfortable because it could be very well possible that we pass like Rabbi Yehuda against Rabbi Meir, so we don't want to see a Stam Mishnah, you know, an anonymous Mishnah that reflects the sheet of Rabbi Meir. We don't pass like Rabbi Meir. Says the Gemara of Elamai, Rabbi Meir, you're going to tell me that our Mishnah reflects the sheet of Rabbi Meir? That's also problematic. Why? Because let's read the language of the Mishnah very meticulously. What does it say in the Mishnah? Hi, the language of the Mishnah is, quote, Kol shah shemutal lechol machil. Now, this is a very strange language. Mutal lechol. What do you mean mutar lechol? It's as if we're giving you some sort of a heter. You know, really, it should be awesome, but we're going to be matar you. We're going to allow you to eat it. The Gemara wants to rewrite our Mishnah at the beginning of the second parak, so that it reflects the sheet of Rabbi Meir. If we were to rewrite the Mishnah, it would say the following, quote, Kol shasha ochel machil. Whenever he eats the chametz, he feeds it to his animals. Miboile, that's what it should have said. Miboile means that's what it should have been said. So the Gemara thinks that from the fact that it says mutar lechol, the implication, again, this is a nuance of meaning here in the Lashon HaKodesh, that the word mutar means that, you know what, it really should be asur, but we're going to allow you to eat it. What does that mean? That certainly doesn't fit into Rabbi Meir. Now, if I were to say the following, let's divide up the population into two groups. And we're going to say that one group is not allowed to eat the chametz. Another group is allowed to eat the chametz. Then the word mutar would be absolutely appropriate. But if everybody, the entire Jewish population, is allowed to eat the chametz, which is Rabbi Meir's description of the fifth hour, everyone is allowed to eat chametz, then what are you saying mutar? We're going to allow you to eat the chametz, as if to say that somebody else is not allowed to eat the chametz. And the Gemara says that this language of muta could only reflect the shita of Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel is the only shita that divides up the population into two categories. He's got the Yisraelim, and he's got the Kohanim. And that's going to be the story of chametz in the fifth hour. Rabbi Gamliel is going to say that no one who's an alien, so to speak, who's a zar, he's a non-Kohen, he's allowed to eat chametz during the fifth hour. But the Kohanim are going to be allowed to eat truma during the fifth hour. Why? Because there's a mitzvah to eat truma, which is a double mitzvah. So the truma itself has to be eaten, that's a mitzvah of Kedushas truma, and the gavra, the Kohen himself, is obligated to eat the truma. And because of this double whammy mitzvah of something that's so holy as truma, Rabbi Gamliel says we're going to be matir the Kohanim to eat the truma, when really the Kohanim should not be allowed to eat the truma, because this truma is chametz, and every other Jew who's not a Kohen is not allowed to eat chametz during the fifth hour. because in that sense Rabbi Gamliel belongs to the camp of Rabbi Yehuda. The fifth hour of Chometz is already also. So now the Mishnah says Kol Shoshem Mutar Lechol, meaning this is somebody on the face of the earth is allowed to eat Chometz, no one else is, and that somebody is a Kohen who's eating Truma, and again the Truma is Chometz, is then Machel Abehema, during that hour you're allowed to have Hadnoah from it. So Amar Rav Bar Ula Masnisa Rav Gamliel, the author of our Mishnah is Rav Gamliel. This nine we have Rav Gamliel in the last Mishnah that we studied together back on Daf Yud Gimel, and it says Rav Gamliel Omer Chulin Nechon Kol Arba. You can eat Chulin until the end of the fourth hour, but with the inception of the fifth hour, you're not allowed to eat Chulin. But Truma, if it's made of Chametz, is Kol Chametz. The entire fifth hour, you're allowed to eat Truma. Again, who's eating Truma? The Kohen. So that's called Mutter. And we're going to be matir the Kohen to eat this Truma's Chametz because of the benefit and the need to salvage this Truma. Give it another hour. We'll give the Kohen another hour to eat the Truma. And therefore, during that fifth hour, when it's Mutter for a Kohen to eat Chametz, meaning Truma, is that's during the fifth hour. Sarfim mitchil sheish, we're going to wait to burn the chametz until the beginning of the sixth hour, which means that you're allowed to feed your dog. Now again, are you allowed to eat it?
No.
It depends. If assuming you're not a Kohen, you're not allowed to eat it. But you're allowed to feed it to your dog. That's what the Mishnah is implying. But how does the Mishnah describe that hour in which you're not allowed to eat it, but you're allowed to feed it to your dog? It describes it by, it's the Shashem Mutter. Mutter Lechel. Who is Mutter Lechel? And what is he Mutter Lechel?
Truma.
Ah, during that hour that we allowed the Kohen to eat Truma, during that hour we're allowed to benefit from the Chametz, even though anyone who's not a Kohen is not eating Truma, he's eating Chulin, is not allowed to eat Chametz, but he's allowed to feed, during that fifth hour, he's allowed to feed his dog the chametz. Yisrael machil, he's allowed to feed chulin lebehema lechayalofos, even though it's chametz, because it's only the fifth hour. And since there's no all inclusive absolute isra achilas chametz, because the kohenim are allowed to eat chametz during the fifth hour, therefore they left the hanah, the heter hanah in its place, and the inception of the heter of the isra hanah is going to be delayed until the beginning of the sixth hour, when no one's allowed to eat chametz, not even a kohen who's eating truma. Now the Mishnah says that he's allowed to feed behema, chaya, and of. Lamali lemisni behema, lamali lemisni chaya. Later on, the Gemara is going to ask lamali lemisni of. But right now, the Gemara is comparing two different types of animals. We have behemos, and we have chayos. Why did the Mishnah have to bother telling me that you're allowed to feed behemos and chayos? It's a very superfluous part of the Mishnah. It's tzricha. We need both. To eat tana behema. Behema will either eat the chametz and consume it totally, wipe it out, or it will just drop it right there in the place. A behema is not known for hiding things. Again, we have to Google the zoologists and figure out if this is true, but that's the Gemara's premise over here. And therefore, the imish shayre, if the animal decides not to eat up all the chametz you gave it for whatever reason, then chazile, you'll see the chametz right in front of you, because the behemoth does not hide its crumbs of chametz, its leftover chametz. This is called ein derech habehemoth latznia shiare machola. Yeah, we have something called shirayim are leftovers, and the behemoth doesn't usually put the shirayim away and hide it underground. Avalchaya. Let's say, for example, a chulda. You remember we discussed about a chulda at great length, a weasel, I think we called it. Or we have a chatul. Let's say a cat is considered a chaya. In all these cases, darkon latznia, they take food and they hide it for a rainy day. And then the imishaira, whatever it doesn't eat now, kamatzla is the Aramaic conjugation of the word lehatznia. Kamatzla is emolo. Let's not mess around. You're in deep trouble here. You did your bedikas chametz, and now you're feeding your chaya, and do you know that there's no chametz going into the house? Maybe there's chametz going into the house. Why? Because what does the chaya do with its leftover chametz? Matzniah. What does matzniah mean? It hides it. So I don't know where that chametz is. What a headache. I'm going to have to now redo and duplicate my entire bedika to find the shirayim of this chaya. So maybe it's not a good idea to feed your weasel in the fifth hour of Erev Pesach.
What if you bittle?
Even if you did bittle on it, but we said the rabban are not going to rely on bittle, they're going to acquire bedika in order to destroy all your chametz. Bittle does not exempt you from bedika. You're still obligated in bedika. And now you're going to be obligated in bedika a second time over, because even though you did a great bedikah last night, but you decided today at 11 a.m. on Erev Pesach to feed your chaya, and this little weasel is going to start hiding pieces of chametz back in the house. Oh my goodness. Another bedikah. It's not enough to do one bedikah, now I got to do a second bedikah.
You have to do a second. So besides the bittul that you normally do with the burning, would you have to do another bittul before that because you did another bedikah? Is it?
Well, it could be that every bedika requires a bittul.
That's my question.
Okay, for that you have to go through the Mishnah Berurah very carefully. That's my 10 o'clock class. In any event, the final maskana is that you're allowed to feed a chaya. And the question is why? I mean, after all, the Gemara just establishes the psychology of a chaya is to hide its shirayim. And if it hides its shirayim, you're going to have to do another bedika. So that's the subject of this Tosus here, V.E., which I want to take a look at with you in just a minute. But now we want to know the following. Well, in which of these two cases, I'm asking a question here, who can answer this question? Are you all ready? You're ready for this? Okay. This is going to be a race to see who can put up their hand first. Here's the question. In which of the following two categories of animals would it make more sense that you're allowed to feed these animals an hour before the Isur Chametz? In a behema case or a chaya? What do you say? In a behema case, because what's the animal going to do with it? It's going to either eat it all up or leave the shirayim right in front of your eyes. You'll know exactly where it is. Not a good idea to feed your chaya. So now the Mishnah says, no, it's okay to feed your chaya. We're going to have to understand why that's the subject of this Tosfos. So why couldn't the Mishnah tell me chaya, and then with a kal v'chomer, it would be upgraded, it would be understood that a behema for sure I can feed. There was a hava mina that maybe I could only feed a behema. And the Mishnah had to go out of its way to tell me chaya. So that's the next line in the Gemara. Eat on a chaya. If we would have only had chaya, we would have a svara to say that you're allowed to feed a chaya, but you're not allowed to feed a behema. Why? Bishum de'i mishaira mias matzna'a. If the chaya hides the chametz that it left over, you don't have a problem, but behema zimna de mishaira. What happens is you feed the behema, and you don't realize that the animal didn't, wasn't in the mood to eat the whole meal. You know, you've been feeding your animals for years, and the animal always eats the whole thing. V'lo masak adaitai, and it didn't cross his mind that the behemoth left some chametz there. V'koyale, and now referring to this chametz, you could say b'val yiroh b'val yimotzeh, he violates two lavim in the Torah, because this is his chametz. He was not mevatel the chametz because he wanted to give it to the animal, and little did he know that the animal left over some of the chametz. He didn't even pay attention to that. In his mind, the animal would surely complete its meal and bench, probably if there are three of them, they have a zibun. And, they all wore little caps, the yarmulkes, you can make doctors, this, we can really have a whole thing here. So the animal would certainly finish all the chametz. It didn't occur to me, hey, wait a minute, maybe I better check it out. Maybe the animal didn't eat the chametz, or it didn't eat all the chametz, and there's a significant amount of chametz left over. If that be the case, I'm violating Bayur Abayim Matzeh. So therefore, you know what? If you had told me chaya, Chaya is going to take the shirayim that it's going to leave over and hide it. If it hides it, I don't violate Bal Yerov HaYimotz. Again, that's going to be the subject that's Tosfos the V'i. why is it that in the case of Chaya that hides the Shirayim, I don't violate by Yerubim Matzah? But in the case of Behema, the Behema is not even putting away this these Shirayim in a hidden place. It's right there. I didn't pay attention to it, and then I violate by Yerubim Matzah. Is low, therefore I would not assume that the Chacham would allow me to feed a Behema. Tzricha, therefore I need both. I need Chaya and Behema. Again, if I only had Behema, I would not know Chaya, because Chaya is a problem, because I'm going to have to do another Bedika if the Chaya hides the Chametz. But if it would have said Chaya and not Behema, I would say, no, I have an even a worse problem if I feed a Behema, because I might actually violate Bal Yerubim Matzah. Why? Because it doesn't occur to me that the animal left over the chametz, and without even hiding it, there's the chametz right there, and I didn't even pay attention to it. And now I'm in ownership of chametz over Pesach, and I violate by your Rabbi Yimotzi. So I need two chidushim here. I need one chidush to tell me that even a chaya you're allowed to feed, despite the fact that the chaya leaves over and hides its shirayim. And now I need another chiddush, I'm allowed to feed a behemoth despite the fact that the animal might not eat the chametz and leaves it right there, afanart, in that same spot. So in order to understand this gemara properly, we're going to have to look at Tosus, as I said before, V'i. Tosus takes up now the case of Chaya. Let's say the Chaya hides the Shirayim. Eino over mishum bal yatmin. You may recall back on Daf Vav, we had a sugya called bal yatmin. You're not allowed to take your chametz and hide it. Let's say I dig a hole underneath my floor and I hide my chametz there and I cover it over. I can't see the chametz. So if I had only lo yiroya, which means you're not allowed to see the chametz, I would think, okay, I can hide the chametz. But if I have, now that I have lo yimotze means it can't be found. It can't be anywhere that it could possibly be found, even though I don't see it. So that's called bal yatmin, where I hide the chametz. So now, instead of my hiding the chametz, who went ahead and hid the shirayim?
The chaya.
The chaya. Oh, so why don't I violate bal yimotze? Under the law of Bal Yatmin. Says Tosvis, V'ein zem matzui. You have to underline those three words. V'ein zem matzui. This is not a violation of lo yimotze. Why not? Kevan she'ein yodua heichon hu. Now, if I hide the chametz, that's called yimotze. You know, I can just dig it up, unearth the chametz. I know exactly where it's located. But here, in the case of the chulda, the chaya, right? The chulda goes into my house with shirayim of chametz. I have no clue where she hid the chametz. If I have no clue where she hid the chametz, it's not matzui. We have to figure out what the word matzui means. And if it's not matzui, I don't violate lo yimotze. So, in the case of al yatmin, who hid the chametz? He himself, the owner of the chametz, hid the chametz, the owner of the house. He knows where the chametz is. He might have to write himself a little note, you know, where did I hide the chametz? Because people do forget.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, right? And that's called bal yatmin. But in the case of the chulda, the chaya, the chulda hid the chametz. I have no clue where it hid the chametz. We need one of these chametz detectors. Have you ever seen that? The chametz detectors?
You know. But you could come across it, isn't it? I thought that's what it meant by you might say. In other words, I could be opening up a cabinet, a lower cabinet.
Right.
And, oh, there it is.
Oh. So Tosa says, no, it's not enough that you could open the cabinet. It's got to be matzu. So now we have to figure out, what is the word matzu?
And you got to search for it.
Right. Matzu means that in some sense it's accessible to me. Again, anything is theoretically accessible, like you said.
He put it in a cabinet that my wife has designated as being Pesach. I open it up to get
right.
The matzah out, and there's the chametz.
Right.
There.
But it's not readily accessible. Matzah means it's got to be readily accessible. Like, let's say, you know, give me 5 minutes and I'll get you the chametz. But here, where is the chametz? So I have no clue where the chulda hid the chametz. Maybe the chulda has a little cove over there, you know, like the mouse, you know, has a little, what's called a mouse hole. I don't know where to get the chametz. It's very difficult for me to find the chametz. Again, I'd have to maybe unearth the whole house, you know, and maybe I should, you know, get the movers here, you know, the cranes, and just remove the whole house until I finally find that chametz where the chulda hid the chametz. So Tosa says that's not matzah. Bal yatmin means I hid the chametz. If I hid the chametz, I know where it is. Give me 5 minutes. I'll read my notes, you know, and I'll see, you know, there's an X over here. That's where the chametz is. That's called lo yimatzeh. Lo yimatzeh means I could find it. Not that it could be found, you know, through some sort of divine, you know, prophecy. You know, if a prophet came down and told me, Eliyahu HaNavi told me, you know, the chulda went there, you know, they pointed there. That's where the chulda went. You know, that would be lo yimatzeh, because I can find it. But Eliyahu HaNavi's not going to tell me where the chulda hid the chametz. And it's not readily accessible to me. I can't find it. Again, theoretically, I could find it, but I'd have to unearth the whole house in order to find it. You know, take apart the whole house. So in that case, Tosus claims, you don't violate Bal Yerov Bal Yimatzeh. There's no Bal Yatmin on the Hatznaa of a Chaya, because the Hatznaa of a Chaya is a concealed place, and you don't know where that is. As I said, if you had a chametz detector, you know, they have these detectors that can tell you where a metal is. You know, metal detector, you know what I'm talking about? So they have these portable metal detectors. You know, as you go around and the you know, the red light will point in a certain direction, that's where you'll find the metal. But in the case of chametz, we don't have such a detector, and therefore we don't know where the chametz is. So herein lies the difference between a chay and a behemah. A behemah will leave it right there in front of your eyes. The only trouble is you didn't look, because lo asika daite. Didn't occur to you that this animal was not in a mood for a good, you know, a good piece of Arnold's bakery, you know, a gesunta piece of bread. So it didn't even occur to you that there's a piece of bread there. You didn't even look at it. You just threw it towards the behemah and forget it. You thought it's over with. That the behemah will certainly consume the chametz. But in the case of a chaya, you're in much better shape, because you may know very well that the chaya is going to leave over some of the chametz, but you have no clue where it's going to hide the chametz, because that's the difference between a chaya and a behemah. A behemah leaves the chametz right there in its place, but a chaya will hide the chametz. He says, "V'chein mashma b'perek kama." I'll quote to you a sugya in the first perek. And the Gemara asks over there, why do you have to have a bittul right after bedika? You're afraid that maybe your bedika was not foolproof and you'll find a piece of chametz. Why not be mevatel your chametz ki mishkachas when you find the chametz? You know, you're going to force me to make a bittul after bedika on the tzad that maybe you'll find a piece of chametz. All right, so in the worst case scenario, I found a piece of chametz. I missed it during my bedika. I'll make bittul as soon as I find it. Mashma, to kol kama dulo mishkachas, until you actually find this chametz, lo avar bebal yiroa. Now wait a second. You missed a piece of chametz during your bedika. The chametz is there. It's in your house. It's yours. And now you want to know why you need bittul. You're saying no. There's no violation of bal yiroa mitzvah. Of course, there's a violation of bal yiroa mitzvah. You missed a piece of chametz. It's your chametz. But the answer is you have no idea where that chametz is. You checked in every corner. And now this chametz somehow miraculously avoided you. You know, this chametz has a mind of its own. You know, every time you went here, went there, the chametz flew out and went into a different corner. You know, you couldn't. So this chametz has eluded you. Maybe there was a deep, you know, deep crevice, and you didn't put your hand far enough in, and it's really chametz. I don't know. But as far as you're concerned, if you did a bedika, you don't know about any other. That's not Bal Yatmin. Bal Yatmin means you deliberately hid the chametz. You know where it is. Then you violate Bal Yimotze. But if you cleared out your house, and this is what I'm going to discuss later on in my 11:45 shiur, that the purpose of bedikah is to convert the bias from a bias with a cheskas chametz into a bias that is a chazok that has no chametz, and we transform the status of the bias and the chazok of the bias. So now you don't know about any chametz. You have every reason to assume there's no chametz there. And if there is chametz, Leo Anovi knows that there's some chametz hidden around, you have no access to that chametz. That's not considered Bal Yatmin. Bal Yatmin only applies when it's reasonable for you to find the chametz. Why? Because you yourself hid the chametz. Hikshar Rashba, Hechi Shari Lahachil L'Chayim. How could we permit feeding a chaya, shedarka lahatmin, when the chaya generally will take its leftover shirayim, chametz, and hide it? Hotnan v'perikama, mashem eshayer, yani cheder b'tzina. After you finish your bedika, you leave over some chametz for the next morning, make sure that you lock it up. Kedesh lo titol chuldo b'fanov, so that a chulda shouldn't take it in front of his eyes. Then he's going to have to run around looking for this chametz that was taken in to his house by a chuldah. And now we're saying you're allowed to give chametz to the chuldah? When you know for sure that the chuldah, or it's reasonable to assume, probable to assume that the chuldah, is going to leave all the chametz and run into the house and hide it somewhere? We just finished saying that if you see a chuldah going into the house, you have to find that chametz. The Tosfos says Yesh lechalek bein chaya lechulda. He says the following: that chaya is a non-domesticated animal. I know there's a big machlokas today about cats, whether you can domesticate a cat. Well, what do you think?
If they're born, you take them as babies, usually you can domesticate them or bring them in.
You know, later. Somebody told me that he believes that a cat is different than a dog. No matter what you do, you can never really control the cat.
There's no question. That's why I say they fight like cats and dogs.
No, but there are some cats that we call house cats as opposed to...
But even so.
Okay. I don't know. I'm just telling you that I heard such a rumor from somebody who knows. He told me that you can't really do it. But in any event, he's saying that a chulda could be domesticated. You know, it's like, what's that animal they have in Australia? What's it called?
Kangaroo?
No, not koala, it's called?
Wallaby.
Or wallaby.
That, you know, little thing?
Yeah, those little furry things.
Koala.
So maybe that's a chulda. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's a chulda and you can domesticate it. I don't know. So he's saying the following. He says that a chulda shemegadlin bebatim hahi lo mitznai kuli hai kamo chulda hatomenes bechorin ubistokin. Alright, let's see if I can figure this out here. In the back of the Masifti has something called biurim. So let's see if he gives me a little bit of the psychology here of animals. Because frankly speaking, I never worked in a zoo. I once, you know, volunteered on a kibbutz and they put me into a turkey coop. I didn't last very long because all of a sudden I saw 1,000 turkeys looking me in the eye. I just ran out. I ran out of it. I didn't know what they were about to do. And I wasn't taking any chances. So he says the following. Yesh l'chalik ben chaya l'chulda. De chaya shemegadlim bebatim shanya. De ahi lo mitzna kule hai. I see. So he claims the following, that within the category of chaya, there are some animals that can be domesticated. And if they are, lomatsne kule hai, I guess they feel that their owners will take good care of them and supply them with ample food, so they don't have to hide food for a rainy day. But chulda, he says, chulda is not domesticated. So just the opposite of what I said, that a chulda is not is tomenes bechorin ubistokim. The chulda is not your pet chulda that depends upon you to feed it, and therefore the chulda is worried and it's going to really, really hide its chametz. Now, paradoxically, which is better, the chulda or the rest of the chayos, as far as chametz is concerned? Again, I'll repeat it: the rest of the animals that are chayos that are domesticated, they don't place the chometz kulei high. They don't hide it bechorin ubestakin, you know, in cracks and crevices where you'll never even dream that it's there. But in the case of a chulda, because it's not domesticated, therefore will hide it in chorin ubestakin where you won't find it. Which one is worse as far as ownership of chometz, you know, as far as the human being is concerned? Just the opposite. Why? Because again, which
I got half right.
Right.
I'm 1 for 2.
Right. Why, Don? Because Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh means that it's matzui for you. So if you have a domesticated animal that's not going to be so nervous and hide it in Chorin Ustakim, you know, deep in the crevices of the wall, then that's a problem. Because that's called matzui. That's something that you could find, could get access. But the behema, I'm sorry, the chulda, which is non-domesticated and will hide it b'chorin u'v'stakin, that's a serious problem. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's not a problem, I meant to say. Why is it not a problem? Because that's not accessible to you. It's not much. Okay. That's what he's saying. I just want to see if he adds anything. He has a footnote here, number Vav. Just give me a second. Oh. Chulda tomenes b'chorin u'bistakin. Is a chaya she'ina mitznas kol kach. Ah, so he has a svasemis. The svasemis seems to learn the exact opposite. That chaya she'ina mitznas kol kach. Is that's better? Why is that better? The lo chayshin in shtei chashoshos shema tatsniya v'gam shema yimtzeena kevan shatsno gufo lo shchiya.
That was my answer the first time you asked the question, you know, 20 minutes ago. That's what I was thinking.
All right. So let's see, where are we up to now? Ophos, right? We have to just finish up with the Ophos. So the Gemara says the following. And this is about 5 lines up from the bottom of the page. Ophos lomalu. Why did the Mishnah have to tell me that I'm allowed to feed the birds? Notice, once you told me both Behema and Chaya, l'chor, we've covered all our bases. So the Gemara says, Enochinami, there's no chiddush in Ophos. It wasn't necessary for the Mishnah to mention Ophos. But rather, Aidi de Tana, Behema v'chaya, Tani naimi Ophos. Meaning it's the language of the Mishnah all over Shas, and when it mentions Behema and Chaya, it also mentions Ophos. That's called Aidi de Tana.
Does it say which category it belongs to?
Well, Ophos is a category of its own, but what he's saying is that once you know you're allowed to feed Chai and Ophos, I'm sorry, Chai and Behemos, okay, then for sure you're allowed to feed Ophos as well. Now, the Mishnah mentioned that you're not allowed to use chometz as fuel. That's called Lo Yasik Bo Taner V'Kirayim. So if you take a look at Rashi on the Mishnah, Rashi says, "B'gemara parach pshita, ha nami hanahi." Now, why did the Mishnah feel compelled to tell me that you're not allowed to use chametz as fuel? I mean, for sure, you'd be benefiting from the chametz.
That's what next is feeding it, selling it to a Gentile.
Right. No, I'm just saying, if you go back to the Mishnah just for one moment,
okay.
I'm just saying the Gemara is trying to tell you the Chidushim here. So Rashi says that the add-on here in the Mishnah that you're not allowed to use chametz as fuel doesn't seem to be telling you any Chidush. I mean, you're not allowed to benefit from chametz. This would be a great benefit from chametz. So we tried to explain that when the chametz is going up in flames, it's already charcoal. It's no longer edible. And therefore you would think that you're allowed to benefit from it.
Actually, it depends upon what you're using the fire for, when you're benefiting from it. what if he's...
Well, no, he's using it to cook his pot, keep in mind, right? So he's
so you know, it's a benefit.
It's a great benefit, but is he benefiting from the chametz, or he's benefiting from something that once was chametz, but is no longer chametz? Says at the moment that he benefits, it's not chametz. So the last thing we want to do, and then we'll call it a day, is Tosus Dimrasko Lema. You have that Tosus Lema? The Gemara says the following. Shall we assume that our mission is against Rabbi Yehuda? Because again, Rabbi Yehuda has that fifth hour where you're not allowed to eat it, but you're allowed to feed it to your animal. Now the word Lema, as a universal rule in Shas, always means a Havamina that's going to be rejected. Lema, shall we say. The Tos says no, here's the exception. The Af Lefi HaMaskana, even according to the Gemara's conclusion, Lo Asya, our mission could not reflect Rabbi Yehuda. So what does the word Lema mean? That's Tosis has a linguistical problem with the usage of the word Lema here. Because Lema always indicates that we're going to reject this. So here we're not going to reject it. Elohaki Kamar, Lema Masnisin de Lo Rabbi Yehuda Ela Rabbi Meir. The Havamina was that in the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, our Mishnah is a reflection of Rabbi Meir. That's what it means. Lema deloke Rabbi Yehuda. So you have to read it like that. Not the negative, but the positive. Deloke Rabbi Yehuda, eloke Rabbi Meir. And that's going to be a Havamina which is going to be rejected, because Umasik, according to the Maskona, the final conclusion, Dikir Rabbi Meir Nami Loasi. Our mission could not reflect the sheet of Rabbi Meir because of the word mutar that we spoke about at great length. Okay, there are both sides. So we'll stop here. Let's make a note that we're up to Umochro Lenochri. That's where we want to pick it up tomorrow. Let's see, I'm going to try to make a note of it here. But you know what? I reserve the possibility of adding something to the Mishnah that maybe I'll find something to clarify the Mishnah. So with today's Shia, we began a new parak. I don't know if you got it. I tried to send out an email.
I got it.
Yeah, just to tell you that we're starting a new parak. Maybe there's someone out there who would want to join us now that we're starting something new.